Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 730, Interview with Installation 00, recorded on April 23rd, 2020. Hello everyone, this is Duststorm, and I am joined by a very special guest for this podcast. We have Installation 00 from the YouTube side of the Halo community. Welcome to Podtacular.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure having you on. We're doing this pre-recorded, so for those that are watching the live stream and are like, hey, why isn't this live? There's a little bit of a time difference between where Installation 00 and we are at the moment.
Yeah, just what about 6-7 hours, something like that.
Yeah, 6-7 hours and what, like a good 1,500 miles or more?
Yeah, like thereabouts. Like, yeah, nothing. It's nothing really, yeah.
Right. So we are excited to have our next slew of guests, and Installation 00 is our next person up to bat, and we're happy to have him on. So we have two questions that we always ask our first-time guests on the show.
Mm-hmm.
First one is, how did you first get involved with Halo?
How did I first get involved? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you turn the clock back all the way to around about the release of Halo CE, I was in town, in my local town with my mum. I'm bearing in mind, I'm early teens at this stage. I'm in town with my mum, and she's buying my brother a computer game. He's got a different setup. He didn't have the Xbox or anything. And I saw the Xbox console in the local game store, and I walked up to it, and there was this weird game playing there. And I just saw a guy that I could move around and control. I saw a vehicle nearby that I hopped into. Little did I know, I was playing the Silent Cartographer from Halo CE, and it left such an impression on me. Even the short time I was in the store, it left such an impression on me about the environment and the graphics and the interactivity and the enemies and this huge arcing silhouette of the halo above me. Just that left such a huge impression that I absolutely and utterly had to have this game and this console. So that is after discovering that, it took me a short amount of time to save up the money, and yeah, I bought my first original OG Xbox and Halo CE, and yeah, the rest is history. Here I am.
Very good. So Halo CE was kind of your first intro into, yep, Halo as a franchise.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. Very cool. And second question is, what do you do within the Halo community, which is one of the reasons why we have you on here. So why don't we just go ahead and kick it off of what is it that you do on your YouTube channel?
So I'm probably best known for my most detailed breakdowns. So I spent a lot of time, I've got formal qualifications in material science and computer science, and I've spent so much time loving the Halo universe. I started putting two and two together and thought, okay, well, how does Mjolnir work? How does this component work? How does what's the armor plating likely to be made out of? And started spitballing different ideas myself. And then eventually I realized I had basically what was equated to the beginnings of a script. So I decided, well, I'll just record it, audio record it. So it's easily collatable and digestible. And I thought, well, now I've got audio, I might as well make a video. And once I had the video, I thought, well, I might as well upload it to YouTube. And once I uploaded it to YouTube, suddenly people were asking me to do other stuff. So yeah, I'm probably best known for my most detailed breakdowns and diving into ridiculous levels of detail for some of the stuff that you find in the Halo universe.
Yes, certainly. That is definitely one of the things that has kind of clued me into your YouTube channel. And I forget where I first heard of you. I think it was either a video from Hidden Xperia or Halo Canon on YouTube, probably back kind of mid to late last year.
Yeah, I've collaborated with both of them. So yeah, it's likely. And I did collaborate with them sort of quite close together, so yeah, it's going to be either one of those.
And you've been part of the YouTube game for a little while now. When did you start your YouTube career, so to speak?
I actually started uploading videos more regularly a little over about a year and a half ago now, I think, getting on to a year and a half. And I've only been on the scene for a second, really, when you weigh up against the other guys like Hidden Xperia and Halo Cannon, the other guys. But just year and a half of sort of semi-regular uploads, and then it all kicked off huge when I had a collaboration with Eckhart's Ladder, and that was less than a year ago. In fact, that was about 10 months ago, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, we went big about 10 months ago, and it's been a really, really interesting ride since.
Yeah, that's cool, because you guys actually delve into some similar topics. He does a lot more on the Star Wars side of things, and we've actually had him on the show before.
All right.
I forget what we actually talked about with him on the show, but we have had him on the show, and he's expressed interest in coming back to talk about a couple of things. We had got to figure a good topic for it, especially with talent of that caliber. Mm. But yeah, it was a good time having him on, and you guys have a lot of that real appreciation for trying to figure out the nuances of how things interact within the respective universes and what makes the universe tick overall.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was mind-blowing for me to be like, just, I still even now just view myself as just some dude who uploads YouTube videos. That's it. That's all I do. But it was like mind-blowing for me for Eckhart to approach me and be like, hey, do you want to do a collaboration? And I was like, what? I'm just me. You're Eckhart's Ladder. I've been watching you for years, and you want to collaborate with me. Okay, cool. Let's do it.
That's cool that he reached out to you. I think that shows that you actually have a good formula, and that the content you're making is great.
I say absolute props to Eckhart for, I mean, he is literally pretty much the only reason I got as big as I have, as quickly as I have. He gave me that leg up on the ladder, so to speak. And it's just been wild ever since.
That's cool. That's really cool to hear. Yeah. So for the YouTube stuff, is it something that you ever thought you would actually get into when you were, younger or getting into the kind of the gaming side of
Truth
things?
Truth be told, I did have a YouTube channel years and years and years ago that I uploaded. I started uploading stupid little parodies and like little skits that I did with some mates from college. And then it shifted over, and when I was a younger man, not so young anymore, but when I was a younger man, I used to do parkour. So I would upload videos from my parkour team to my to this old channel that's now lost to the sands of time. And I mean, it got okay. I think about 5,000 subscribers, and you know, it was sort of picked up a little bit of traction, but really that's all it was to me. It was just like a little YouTube channel. That was it. You know, I went out and, you know, did my qualifications and got a job and I've been living life and raising a family. And it's just, yeah, the YouTube game never sort of, I knew about it. I knew people could earn on it. I watch loads of guys on YouTube, not just Halo guys, but other stuff as well. But it never clicked to me to think, well, that could be a career. And it's only, like I said, completely by accident that I thought, well, I'll make this into a, you know, I've got kind of the base of a script. I'll make this into audio. I'll make this into a video. I'll upload it, see what people think. It's only because of that that this even started to happen. So, yeah, I had no clue that this was where it was going to go for me. But I can't even begin to say how like psyched and thankful I am to be in the position I am. It's phenomenal. It really is.
Good. And for the YouTube stuff that you have done, you've gotten wonderful support, it sounds like, and from what you sound like that you've said, with Eckhart's Ladder really kind of giving you that boost, is it something that it's transferred into a full-time job and YouTube is your primary kind of job or source of income, or do you still actually have a lot of life outside of YouTube?
So no, actually I must have been about a month and a half ago, literally just before we got hit with all of the COVID-19 crap.
Yeah,
I handed in my resignation and I've gone full time since. So actually, it kind of hit, you know, the whole being full time YouTuber kind of hit right at the right point, because I went from, you know, having to go out to work, then the COVID-19 thing happened, but now I'm working from home. It's like, okay, actually, this is kind of worked out. This is nice.
Yeah, it's kind of that silver lining to the whole mess that's going on right now. All right, very cool. And it's something that you haven't been burnt out yet on, which is good. Hopefully you won't get burnt out on it.
There's so much to dive into. That's the thing. And the more I dig, though, I mean, I'm as much of a Halo fan as you can be. I've got the books. I've played all the games. I dive into as much of the lore as I can. You'll always catch me either lurking in my Discord or somewhere else, like having just like wild theoretical chats with other people about, you know, weird stuff that could happen and this, that, and the other. So, yeah.
Like your most recent video?
Yes. Yeah, exactly like my most recent video. Yes. But yeah, there's even to the point, like I say, with the most recent video and with other stuff that I've been doing relatively recently with like scale problems and things like that, it's just, there's so many things, there's so many subjects, even though it's just one game, one franchise, one universe, there is so much to dive into. And like I said, I suppose I'm in quite a privileged position with my qualifications and my experience. I can draw more conclusions, whether they're, you know, exactly in line with the lore or whether they're just, you know, educated guesses. I can draw so much more out than I suppose other people without those kind of qualifications. So I suppose I'm quite gifted in that regard. I'm quite lucky.
Yeah. Well, and the other interesting aspect to it too is you're not necessarily limited to like lore specifically. It's kind of questions that all the community has in different areas within the Halo games, also the lore in the universe as well. Because I mean, one of your more recent ones is the whole scaling issue with the Maw Warthog run,
yes,
from Halo CE, and that's not a lore specific thing necessarily. It has some lore implications to it, but it's more of a technical dive into game development.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, that Bungie worked with the rule of cool. If it was, you know, if it was cool, that trumped everything back in the day. So the Warthog run would naturally be they'd want to make it as fun as possible. And of course, it's that I can guarantee Bungie never thought that there'd be sticklers like me who suddenly come out of the woodwork and think, well, actually, this doesn't fit within the size of the lore scale of the ship, and the ship is out of scale, and maybe you need to adjust this. So it's just exactly, yeah. It's there's just a wealth of information that you can sort of play with, and yeah, you don't necessarily have to do those deep, hard dives into the lore. You can still speculate and have a bit of fun, and the community have been so good with it. So, you know, they've been so accepting of it and willing to have a debate and a chat about it. It's really good. But then that's always been a thing for Halo, isn't it? The community's always been more passionate than I've seen many other communities.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's one of the things that really entices me to stay with the Halo community is, one, how diverse it is, because there's just so many different areas that you can get involved with as far as Forge, props, machinima, artwork. I mean, that artwork's a big thing right now because we have no news, so it's a bunch of community content that we're trying to go for right now.
Yeah.
The lore side, competitive side, I mean, there's a whole slew of different nooks that you can get involved with in the Halo community, and it's just really cool to see how people kind of express themselves or find identity within the franchise.
Yeah.
So give us a little bit background. You mentioned before that you have like a materials background or a little bit kind of an engineering type of background.
Yeah. So
expand on that a little bit.
So in college, I studied electronic and computer engineering. And then I moved over to university, and I've got a degree in computer science and an honors in material science. And after doing that, I've worked in material science and developing prototypes of stuff I can't necessarily discuss too in depth. But as a consequence of those qualifications, yeah, I suppose I've grown quite accustomed to dealing with unknowns, so to speak, in materials and working things out and trying to figure out what things do. And I suppose the amalgamation of the engineering, the computer science, the electronics, it all plays into things like the Mjolnir platform and things like that. So it's kind of a match made in heaven in that regard.
Yeah, you definitely have that material breakdown technicality when you're talking about it in your videos.
Yeah,
it definitely shows.
Well, it's just these little vagaries in the lore that's, you know, like they say that, you know, Mjolnir is made of a titanium of remarkable strength, but they don't elaborate on that. They don't say what kind of titanium. I mean, there are so many isotopes of titanium. There are so many alloys. There are so many permutations and iterations that you can use. There's so many, even like finishing, like treatments to the metal in tempering or sintering or what, you know, loads of different processes you can go into making a metal more expressive some properties and less in others. And so, yeah, it just kind of, it got to me and I thought, well, what is it? You know, what titanium is it? It's, let's look into this and actually get, you know, let's narrow this down, actually pin it down to something.
I want to know!
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, it's all that narrative magical freedom.
Indeed, yes.
It's like, we want to say it's titanium because that's the thing that we know is probably the most strong, but we can't say what because we don't know what would actually be as strong as we need it to be to narratively fit.
Well, if you guys have ever seen, I don't know if you've ever seen the YouTube channel, The Demolition Ranch.
But I have not.
No? So they test loads of different firearms and things like that. And one particular episode that really stuck out to me and demonstrated just how tough titanium can be, a company sent them a block of titanium that's about an inch and a half in thickness, which is approximately as thick as like some of the pectoral plates for Mjolnir. And they Makes shot sense. It with every possible type of round they could think of to try to, you know, like make a dent or a crater or even penetrate the plate altogether. And even shooting it with a 50 BMG, with an armor-piercing tip, one of the black tips, mm-hmm. it although it dug a crater out of the metal, it didn't actually penetrate. And that's just a single solid block of titanium.
Wow. So,
Once you then alloy that with other materials to increase its ductility or its hardness or its, you know, various different properties, you can make titanium remarkably bulletproof is a very subjective term, but you can make it as close to bulletproof as something can be. So I just wanted to explore that and really come to terms with what we were dealing with in the Halo universe.
Growing up, did you have these kind of like scientific inklings of wanting to figure things out or kind of tinker with things, or did that kind of develop later in life?
No, it's definitely something that I've grown up with. My father is he's been a career engineer, so he's worked in precision engineering for 30 years. He moved over into academia and now teaches engineering at one of the universities in the UK here. And has like ridiculous levels of qualifications. And he's got so many letters after his name. He's got more letters after his name than his name actually contains. It's ridiculous.
But, super smart dude, basically.
Yeah, but I suppose because of his career path and his intelligence and him imparting that to me and kind of instilling a curiosity. It's always been there. It's always been present in some degree. And my mum used to say that I would. I tinker with things. I take things apart and put them back together. And even if they work or if they don't work, and I keep tinkering and trying to get it right until it works. So, yeah, it's something that's been present through most of my life. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
I'd have to say the same for me. I have a master's in computer science, so I'm definitely of that kind of technical analytical mindset as well.
Brilliant.
So it's really cool to see whenever you get technical and dive into those things of like being able to like from the most recent video of like, okay, well, how much energy is the Mac from one of the orbital platforms executing as far as energy output and all that kind of stuff. And that kind of stuff just tickles my fancy. So
yeah, well, that's the beginnings of a new little mini series that I want to really explore, like the physics and some of the yields and things that have some of the weapons, some of the shipborne weapons of the UNSC. And there's more I want to do on the Super Mac anyway, because there's so much more to it than just what I've already explained.
Yeah.
Just in regards to how much energy is required to achieve what the Super Mac can. It's just, yeah, there's so much more. So much more.
There's a lot to dive into. And if you want to just like scratch the surface, you just look at the game. So if you want to go deeper, there's all the books. There's all the lore from other like fiction, from the comics to the web series, both Nightfall and Fort of the Dawn. There's multiple different levels you can dive down in.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. The more the better.
I'm always up for more lore. Is something that inspires you kind of just based off of your scientific inquiry, or are there other things that have really inspired you to kind of dive into Halo specifically and kind of really dive into details, whether it's the more technical side of things, or if it's lore based?
I think because I've got a passion for Halo anyway, it's you know, it's somewhat defined my childhood, and I've done videos like where I've sort of retrospectively looked back on Halo over the years and things like that. I think because Halo it stands out as a game from other franchises. That's always a constant source of inspiration. The community are always really supportive, and I love making content for people who get as excited about the lore and about the games as I do. And from kind of an analytics side of things, I'm an autodidact, which basically just means that I can teach myself subjects to like expert level with no guidance.
I'm so envious. I'm so envious.
Because of that, it's like just a gift I've been granted, and I try to use as best I can. But because of that, it means that my curiosity for the Halo universe goes much further than just the material science or the computer science. It goes into the cosmology, it goes into the physics, it goes into the mathematics of it. Basically the entire STEM field that could be applied to 25th century or 26th century humanity is just something I thrive on. Just the mystery and be able to really dive into it. Even the mystery. I mean, I love going off on sort of conspiracy theories every now and then, and you know, putting on the tinfoil hat and really, you know, digging into some skepticism. And yeah, there's just something about Halo and my experience with it growing up and how infused and passionate the fans are. It's just kept me hooked basically since that first little experience in the game shop on the console.
Very cool. And you actually have another YouTube channel, which you launched about 2 months-ish ago?
I do, yes. So that's called the Lorecore Multiverse. And that channel is basically, it's going to be doing something very similar to what I'm doing already on Installation 00. And it's not like I'm sort of stepping away from what I'm doing with Installation 00. But I wanted to cover more things, more subjects. It's not that Halo isn't enough for me. It most certainly is, and it's my bread and butter. I will always love Halo, but knowing that there are universes out there like Mass Effect, Doom, Anthem, Crysis. I mean, even with Crysis, you know, recently announcing that they're releasing a remastered version that could potentially see maybe a new Crysis game coming out in the near future. The things going on with Half-Life Alyx at the moment, you know, the potential of a new Half-Life game. All of these games I've played, I loved. I love the lore, I love the storylines, and I love the technology that's featured in all of these games. I want to give them the service they deserve and really dive into how they work. Because I figure the more we know about how sci-fi stuff works, the more likely we are to make real-life stuff work. Because it seems like sci-fi sort of almost indirectly has influenced the progress of technology. You know, they were talking in Star Trek, they were talking on little handheld communication devices before mobile phones existed.
Yep.
And now we have mobile phones. Whether it's like they're predicting the future or because it's inspired people to create devices that look like the things from Star Trek, or a little bit of both, it doesn't matter. What matters is that if you can instill that passion and that interest and that intrigue into people do amazing things.
Yeah, it's really cool to see how sci-fi kind of influences scientific innovation. I've seen a couple documentaries that kind of also bring up, okay, we have these things that have been kind of inspired from Star Wars or Star Trek and all these different other sci-fi universes that are in film or theater or TV show or now probably even video games at this point.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you only have to have a little search around on the internet and you find a plethora of different government agencies and private corporations that have made powered exoskeletons. You know, whether they're still flawed in some regards, they're still, you know, heavily reliant upon tethered power and things like that. But that's exactly what the earlier platforms of Mjolnir were. You know, the Mjolnir gen, well, technically it wasn't Mjolnir at that stage, but the Mark I platform still had to be tethered to a generator. So, you know, it's almost like we're in the Mark I kind of phase at the moment. So the more people know about this tech, whether it's sci-fi or not, it could inform real life advancements in technology. And that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, certainly. Outside of Halo and kind of the other stuff that you mentioned for like Lorecore, like video game stuff, what other hobbies do you have? Or is it kind of mostly video game focused at this point?
No, it's not necessarily all video games focused. I've always been a person who enjoys working with my hands. So I do have, I actually have a fledgling company that's been established that, that encompasses both the channel and some other work I'm doing. And that includes stuff there. So the thing that's most in the forefront of my mind today, because I've been working on it today, is I'm developing something called the Achilles Force Amplifying Knee Braces. So basically, these are wearable devices that you can wear on your knees and on your ankles that increase your sprint speed, your jump height, and your fall distance. This is somewhat inspired by my past as a person who practiced parkour, but also somewhat inspired by some of the things you've seen in game where you can jump higher or fall further, or you can exhibit some degree of superhuman abilities. So you basically you strap these on and they amplify the force that you put into them. And we're actually up to the one I've been working on today is the seventh generation. And the previous generation that I worked on, we managed to get the sprint speed of my best mate, who also works with me in this. We managed to get his sprint speed from 18 miles an hour to 25 miles an hour. Although it's more of a stride, you have to pace out because of the amount it sort of amplifies the force. We managed to get his vertical jump height from, I think it was about 18 inches vertical jump height to a 56 vertical jump height. And he could fall up to 18 feet and it absorbs the impact.
Whoa.
That was the previous generation. We tested it quite extensively and then eventually broke it, which highlighted some issues that then we needed to fix, which is what we're doing now. And the plan is hopefully to get that finished, get it funded, and then get it on the market in theory.
So you're going to be the one to build the first gen Mjolnir armor, it sounds like.
Not quite to that extent. It's not actively powered. It's passively powered. But yes, that'd be kind of good. Have you played Anthem?
I've watched streams. I haven't actually played it though.
Okay, yeah. So the javelin suits in there have, they've got legs that are very similar to the elites, where they've got like an extra knee, so to speak.
Yeah,
so it's a similar idea to that, but without necessarily being that extra knee and being that much taller. But it just enables you to jump significantly higher, fall significantly further, and run significantly faster. And like I say, the early tests that we've done with this new generation suggests that with them strapped on, we might, and this hopefully the advertisement will write itself, we might be able to out-sprint Usain Bolt, possibly. So
do that fourth 400 meter dash.
Yeah. So we'll have to see if we can max out as being faster than the fastest human alive, then the advertisement writes itself. So we'll just openly challenge Usain Bolt, and the money will come rolling in.
There you go. That's impressive. That's really cool that you're working on stuff and kind of taking application from, I guess, your degree, and then also things that are kind of inspired from your passion of video games.
That's it. I just figure I'm passionate about games. I'm passionate about engineering. I'm passionate about material science. Why not put them all together? It just makes sense. I mean, how cool would that be to work day to day? My day to day job is just working on tech that is almost like making what exists in video games and in movies real. I mean, how cool can you get?
Yeah. Now, would you say you have a more interest in the material sciences or computer science?
Oh, that's a difficult one.
Sorry.
I do like the material science aspect of things, just because, again, I'm a person who really likes working with my hands. And that's not to say that the computer science isn't that way, but I'm sure, with having a master's, it is a lot of coding, a lot of theory, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And while I appreciate the value of that, and I've used it extensively in my career and even in my endeavors at the moment, there's still something about working with my hands and feeling a metal in my hands and working it and manipulating it. There's something about the actual the physicality of material science that still grabs me.
Oh sure, I can definitely understand that. There are certain things that I like to do kind of. So like for Outpost Discovery, I actually created my own buzzers for games like Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I kind of use that a little bit. And I don't have like a strong material background or that kind of stuff. But I took a couple electrical engineering classes, so I knew some of the wiring stuff.
Yeah.
And then I got little Arduinos and did some coding on that to actually get them.
Gotta love the Arduinos.
Love the Arduinos. Yeah. So cool. They're so cool to play with.
That's the great thing about the Arduinos as well, is that it makes that sort of stuff so accessible for everyone. They're so inexpensive. They're so easy to learn. The coding is really quite intuitive and simple to learn. You don't have to be a computer science qualifier or
have a degree or
have
background.
A degree in it, so to speak, in order to be able to use that technology. So that absolutely, I love the Arduinos.
Yeah, if I had enough time, I'd create my own like smart home system with Arduinos instead of using. It's kind of off-the-shelf commercial type stuff, but
yeah,
I'd rather spend my time doing other Halo stuff than build that right now.
Do the kind of panels that like Iron Man has in his mansion. Those would be quite cool, you know. Have like a Jarvis programmed into your house.
Do you think we would have AIs in our lifetime?
Do I think we'll have AIs?
Like some kind of, or at least kind of assistant intelligence stuff that kind of breaks the boundaries of what like. Google Assist or Siri or Cortana does, but it's more life integrated style.
Yes.
Assistant.
Yes, I do. Yeah. Mainly because I've got friends who've worked with artificial intelligence and friends who have studied artificial intelligence, and just judging by what they've said to me in regards to what they're already capable of. It appears like if you look at like the algorithms behind Google, if you look at the algorithms behind YouTube and Facebook and quite a few other enterprises, that these algorithms are already exhibiting very, very intriguing and interesting behaviors that already suggest that they're kind of beginning to wake up to sort of human peculiarities and being able to somewhat exploit them in order to meet their fundamental programmings. So as far as being able to achieve sort of the conventional idea of artificial intelligence in our lifetimes, I think it's an inevitability. As long as we're making small iterative steps towards artificial intelligence, it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
So would you be on the side of bowing down to our AI overlords or fighting the resistance? Or fighting in the resistance?
that's the concern, isn't it? That's the big AI debate.
Yeah.
But if... the concern for me, there is a concern there, but at the same breath, I've got a lot of faith in the people who are actually, sort of behind making artificial intelligence. So the concern is that, yes, if we create an artificial intelligence that is truly intelligent, so to speak, and it thinks, but at the speed of light, because, electricity moves through circuits at almost the speed of light, then that means that it can process information and come to conclusions hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of times faster than a human being, which means that if you consider that our technology nowadays would be completely and utterly alien to people who existed just 100 years ago, if an AI can iterate and come up with new ideas, new processes, new concepts, new ideologies, a million times faster than a human being can, then in a few months, it could be centuries ahead of us as far as its understanding of the universe, causality, its ideologies, and how could we possibly even begin to understand or even expect to be able to control or even direct an artificial intelligence that is centuries ahead of us intellectually speaking?
Yeah,
that's a legitimate concern. In the same breath, the people who are designing these AIs, the people who are doing the work, will inevitably have those concerns and therefore in the forefront of their minds as well. And thus, I have absolute faith that they'll have safeguards in place for just such eventualities.
Like undead iridium?
Yes, exactly. Just a nice little code word, undead iridium, bang, reset.
Yeah. It was cool to see that little nugget of book lore make it into Spartan Ops when
absolutely.
I saw that. Is there any other particular facet of kind of science and technology that you're interested in and that you haven't really explored yet, or have you kind of explored or already engaged in the stuff that you're interested in?
I appreciate that Halo is still a game and it still needs to be fun. But I would like them to explore a little bit more into things like slip space and just the physics of reality. The domain, for example, is really interesting because it's apparently a precursor construct that the Forerunners simply appropriated.
Mm-hmm.
And the metaphysical ideas that surround that are very, very intriguing, that it's effectively a repository for knowledge. And it spans the entire galaxy, perhaps even further than that. And it can be accessed by beings with the right kind of almost genetic programming. That's very interesting. But even just the physics of slip space, it would be great for them to explore that a bit more. I mean, I've literally on my desk, I've got a couple of books by Stephen Hawking and another one by Neil deGrasse Tyson. I mean, it can't get any more kind of, you know,
yeah,
science-y than that. So, yeah.
Can't get much more nerdy.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love them to explore that sort of stuff. But again, I know that, you know, the hard science, the hard physics and all that sort of stuff that surrounds that isn't for everybody, and it may detract from gameplay. So I completely appreciate that it probably won't be gone into, but I live with hope.
That's where the external fiction can really shed light on it if they want to explore that for the
exactly. I mean,
real
the
geeky people.
That's it. I mean, the Forerunner saga was really interesting because it fleshed out the Forerunners in an interesting way, but it also dived subtly into some of their technologies and some of their almost reality bending technologies that can like hide things and you can put more in a place than you'd expect to be able to put in. You know, the control of the dimensions of reality. It was subtly put in there and the way it reads feels mind-bending to read, but it also kind of makes sense as well, and that was really something sort of enjoyable to read through during the Forerunner series.
I will say the one thing that still puzzles me that I still haven't figured out or haven't taken the time to figure out is the Star Roads.
Yeah, exactly. So the mystery of the Star Roads and the precursor constructs and how they kind of link entire solar systems and planets together.
Yeah.
But don't at the same time. That's a really like, yeah. I sort of likened it as something like a little bit like the Bifrost, a little bit like a, you know, an Einstein-Rosen bridge or something along those lines. At least that's what it kind of felt like it was playing towards. But at the same breath, it kind of feels like it's almost like it warps space and time between the two points. So although they're connected in the real world, so to speak, by like millions and millions of, you know, of light years or hundreds of thousands of light years of distance, the actual passage of say a person across one of those star roads, they effectively almost move through their own warp field. If you're familiar with Star Trek lore,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and thus the distance seems massively truncated. But again, it's not been fleshed out enough, and I'd love to know more about the precursors anyway. Because, you know, they're one of the few mysteries that are still in the Halo universe. But I don't know, at the same breath, I kind of think, well, the Forerunners were once mysterious and now they're not so much. Do I want that to happen to the precursors as well? Or do I want some mystery to remain in the Halo universe?
Yeah, that's definitely a hard question because I know a lot of people have really voiced their disdain, I guess, for how the Forerunners were revealed in Halo 4 and how like that mystery isn't really there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like in the first, you know, the Bungie era, the Forerunners were basically just like an ancient version of humanity. And then obviously they were kind of almost recoined, or at least it felt like they were recoined to be a completely separate species. But now we've still got ancient humanity in the fray. So yeah, I can understand where people are coming from completely.
Yeah.
But it just, it is what it is. It's been explored now, but at least we've still got some mystery with ancient humanity that we can look at.
Yeah, and it's still getting explored a little bit because now we have Spark that's kind of regaining some of his ancient human memories as Chakas.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's going to be any more exploration of that anytime soon. It seems like there's a lot just more going up to the Halo Infinite side of things. But there is, again, like taking a look at the 2018 trailer, the human hieroglyphic type stuff that's in the cave, so there could be some kind of throwback reference there.
Yeah, and Zeta Halo has a rich history with ancient humanity anyway.
Yeah.
So in theory, yeah. I'd love to yeah, to explore a little bit more, almost like a kind of a, not a treasure hunt per se, but almost like a kind of a Tomb Raider-y kind of style where we can kind of go through like ancient abandoned sites that ancient humans used to occupy and kind of get a feel for what was happening there at the time. It would be really, yeah, quite intriguing.
Yeah. I figure there's the whole Infinite title, and assuming it's going to be like a games as a service or some kind of like ongoing project with Infinite, not multiple game releases, it'd be cool to see. Yeah. It would be a really cool thing to have added on campaign content or added on capabilities to maybe just like the campaign as it stands or how it will be, to go into the campaign and you get to these little remote sites where it's like a terminal or some thing that kind of triggers a flashback. I mean, even if it's like not necessarily directly lore applicable in the campaign itself, but just like, hey, here's this thing that you discovered. Now go, you've unlocked this article on Waypoint or something like that, or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, something exploratory that rewards you for getting out and about. Yeah,
kind of like the timeline in Halo Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've done a couple of videos, I think, on the idea that there could be at least aspects of Halo Infinite that could be open world to a degree, and that it could, in theory, work within the context of the lore. But yeah, just being able to reward players for a bit of exploration, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, it really would be. I think it works really well with kind of what they've shown off so far. Like having that big open space, just, I don't know, something about that seems really fascinating and really cool to have that prospect be in Halo, like reignite that mystery and that exploration Halo 1.
I mean, even if you look at like the behind the scenes for the Halo Infinite trailer, you can actually see that they've physically modeled the distant Halo ring that arcs up into the sky. And then now before, it's just been a part of the skybox. It's just been, you know, a part of artwork effectively that's off in the distance. So why would they go to the effort of actually physically modeling a portion, a large portion of the ring like that, unless it was explorable? It just doesn't make sense as to why you would model it that way. But yeah, there's so much more to it as well. I mean, even in Halo 4, they effectively made multiplayer canon. They made it work within the context of the lore. That could be used along with kind of a Spartan Ops kind of feel process. That could be used to the advantage of an open world kind of scenario where you go on kind of a Spartan Ops kind of mission, but it's effectively going into an open world scenario on Zeta Halo.
Yeah.
But again, just spitballing ideas.
I love Spartan Ops.
Mm.
I really appreciated like the continuation of the campaign and being able to really explore the space after the campaign was over.
Yeah.
The gameplay is like, some of it was kind of shaky, and some of the dialogue, of course, in the first half of the first season was a little off, but the overall story that we got from Spartan Ops, I really appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much potential for it. I mean, the Spartan Ops, I wish they kind of went further than they did with it. I mean, I agree with you. There's aspects of the gameplay that could become a little bit repetitive. We go to some of the same areas, maybe perhaps too many times, or you play one way through one area, and then you play backwards through that same area in a later mission. But there was so much potential for it to explore other stories around Requiem. And yeah, it's a shame that wasn't explored more comprehensively.
Yeah. Just more opportunity for Infinite with infinite possibilities.
Indeed.
keep playing on that word until we get the game released.
That's it. Well, we've got very little else to go on at the moment, and it'd be great to get some new marketing information about Halo, but hey, it's a content drought. We'll work with what we've got.
People are getting antsy, man.
Oh, so am I. So am I.
People are scratching, and you're either like super worried about it, or you're like, oh, no, I mean, they could be holding their cards close and really wanting to just surprise us with what they've got. So.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, I've been.
It's hard to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially the time that we're in with how the world is right now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've spoken to some of the other Halo YouTubers that have been, obviously, Halo YouTubers much longer than I have, and have thus been to different events. They've been invited to 343 Industries, and they've been, you know, they've seen things and this, that, and the other. they haven't disclosed. I just want to clarify, they haven't disclosed anything for me, to me about it or anything like that. But the suggestion is that there is a lot more going on behind the scenes than the public, the masses currently know. So I still have complete faith that 343 Industries are going to deliver something pretty jaw-dropping.
I think so. There's a lot riding on Infinite. I think they really want to make sure they get it right. And I think they've expressed through kind of the, like when Bonnie was on the social stream over the holidays and like some of the other presentations that we've seen from E3, like when Chris Lee was on there, like throughout the week, really trying to talk about how they're really focusing on core pillars and trying to make sure that the community is respected, whether they're older community members or newer community members within the franchise. So I definitely think they have their hearts in the right place.
Yeah,
and I don't think they really haven't had their hearts in the right place for a while. I think there have definitely been some key players that have unfortunately had some negative impacts or perceived negative impacts on the franchise. But overall, I think everyone wants to make a game that they love and enjoy. And at the end of the day, it is their game that we're playing.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's part of the... I kind of understand it from 343 Industries' perspective. You got to consider they took what was one of the world's greatest gaming franchises from Bungie and had to fill a huge set of boots in that regard. So the idea that they wanted to put their own mark on it, their own kind of style, their own flavor, I completely and utterly appreciate that. And they wanted to make waves and you know, sort of establish themselves. And that's always going to be a chaotic period. That's always going to be a bittersweet situation and a double-edged sword where some people are going to be accepting of it, some people aren't. Some people are going to want nostalgia. Some people are going to want something new. You can't please everyone in that situation.
Exactly. But
I've got absolute faith. Just judging, I mean, if you guys have played Halo Wars 2, just judging by the art style, just the art style alone, you know, the fact they managed to merge the old classic art style with their new kind of modular, more heavy duty kind of style, it worked, and it worked really, really well. So I have absolute faith that they're gonna release a game that's gonna have this perfect balance between the old and the new. That's gonna have that nostalgic effect for all the people who want the older style and you know who want that little trip down memory lane, but also something new to give people something different to sink their teeth into. I've got absolute faith they're gonna nail it.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful that I think they're gonna pull it off. I mean, that it's not gonna be perfect, obviously, because everyone's perfect measurement is different than everyone else's, but I think they're primed to really. I think the core values that they're going off of is really paramount to their success at this point.
Yeah, which is why I kind of I can't feel too bad about the fact that they've not given us a lot to go on, because if they're focusing that much energy and that much time and that many resources into making this game as perfect as it can possibly be, then yeah, I'm happy to take a massively reduced, you know, content release and marketing and stuff like that. If they're spending that much time to get it right, that's a trade-off I'm happy to accept.
Yep, me too. It is hard though, because it is a complete 180 from how Halo 5.
Oh yeah,
was done.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, that's true. It gives like especially people like me, it gives me an opportunity to look at some of the older stuff and dive into some stuff that perhaps I hadn't had the time to do. Because, you know, we'd been almost content saturated by previous games, but now, yeah, it's really, really, really tough. I do want something to be released so I can, you know, really dig into it and wrestle with it and come to terms with it. But at the same breath, I don't want them to rush. So it is what it is.
Yep. And I would personally be okay if, because of the whole COVID-19 stuff, if the game was delayed because they weren't able to kind of put the final polish they wanted on it, I would perfectly be fine with it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's my understanding that a large portion of the studio are still able to work and work from home. But
it's a different dynamic, though. Like, even like with my job and what I do, it's yeah, you definitely have some efficiencies working from home. You don't have to, like, drive to work, or you don't have necessarily the distractions you get from running into someone in the hallway or something like that. But at the same time, there is something about meeting with someone in a room, being able to whiteboard or just have a short discussion in person. So yeah. It's like trade-offs of like, okay.
That's it, like, yeah.
How good is the trade-off in certain areas?
Yeah, that's it.
So we've got a few community questions that came in as we start to kind of wrap up here. And
okay.
We'll have a lightning round of questions as well.
No worries.
Some of these questions, I want to have a preface question beforehand. Can you explain a little bit of the different series you have going on right now? Because you've got like Project 117, you've got the Halsey Journal, you've got like the deep dive into the weapons. What's yeah. kind of your project portfolio that you have going on in the channel?
Okay, so I've got the Most Detailed Breakdown series, which is literally my deepest dives into various aspects of the Halo universe, and I go to insane levels of detail in as many regards as I possibly can. I've got my mainline series, which is the Lore and Theory series, which is just basically where I dive into different aspects of the lore and throw around ideas and explore things. The Armory is a detailed look at all of the weapons of the Halo universe. At the moment, we're mainly focused on the actual weapons you use in-game as the Chief or as a Spartan. But I will eventually move on to other weapons. I've got Classified Materials, which is basically the idea is to dive into like little bits of almost only information from the Halo universe and explore, yeah, basically like classified data and things like that. And the single biggest instance of that is the Halsey Journal. Yep. So we're going through the Halsey Journal entry by entry with a fantastic voice actor called Kat Peterson, who does a phenomenal impression of Dr. Halsey.
She's really good.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have her on board, and it's really breathed life. I mean, I originally started it before she came on board, and I've kind of gone back to the start and re-released it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But she's breathed a life into the narration of the entries into the Halsey Journal. Like, I can't believe how cool it is, and the community are loving it, which is great. And then I've got Project John 117, which is a look at the entire biography and military history of the Master Chief. But it's also a massive collaboration where I basically get people from all over the Halo universe, you know, fans who make artwork, who make Forge maps, who can voice act and things like that, and bring it all together and almost episodically go through the Chief's history entry by entry with all of these collaborative pieces in there as well. So it's both a testament to the Master Chief, that basically, you know, the guy that the entire Halo universe almost revolves around, but also revolving around the entire community as well.
That's cool. It's almost like the Chief backstory from Hunt the Truth on steroids.
Yeah. I'm still genuinely tempted. I probably will at some point. I'm going to pop onto Cameo and get Steve Downes to actually narrate some lines for me as well. I think that'll just breathe like some epic moments into the John 117 series.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. Hopefully, maybe he'll give you a bulk discount of some kind.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it doesn't come cheap, but at the same breath, at the moment, he's donating his entire cut
right.
To COVID-19, which is, that's great. That's absolutely great. I mean, I still want to get around to doing a most detailed breakdown of the Spartan 4 augmentations, because I've done the Spartan 1, Spartan 2, and Spartan 3, so it just seems fitting to do the Spartan 4s.
Yeah.
And I've harassed Nathan Fillion on more than one occasion. To try to get him to narrate some lines from Buck for it, but he's a very difficult man to reach. So I'll persist and I'll keep trying, but I won't hold out a massive amount of hope. He's busy with like the recording of The Rookie at the moment, so it's
he's not an easy person to get, especially when like for fan signatures he asks for like $80 or something like that.
It's all right, I'll give him $80 if he wants to narrate the line for me. I don't mind.
All right, so let's dig into some of these community questions that we have
okay.
from the community. So you have and I think this is more of a joke question. This comes from Red Madness 01. We've seen a Project John 117. What if you do a Project Spartan Locke series?
A Project Spartan Locke. To be fair, Locke's got quite an interesting backstory. And I have had a lot of requests to do Sergeant Johnson's as well.
Johnson would be cool. Buck would be cool as well.
So yeah, that's a great thing about Halo. There are so many interesting characters with, you know, a lot of history. I mean, the chief and Johnson actually go back much, much further than just Halo CE. Much further.
Yep.
So
thank you, Contact Harvest.
Yeah.
There's a Contact Harvest?
I think literally, yeah, I think their paths crossed very early on in the war. So yeah. I mean, yeah, if there's demand there for it and people like the John 117 series enough, yeah, of course. If people want me to do the jump into Locke, why not?
Palmer would be an interesting one, actually, for that.
Palmer would be an interesting one, yeah, because she's got quite an interesting history as well.
Yeah.
I know that some people haven't received Palmer particularly well. I know I've got my own little gripes about her, but really, in the great scheme of things, her history as an ODST moving over to become a Spartan 4, you know, quickly moving up the ranks, she's got a very interesting history as well.
I think aside from the bad scripting and Spartan Ops for her character, I think she's actually probably one of the most accurate representations of kind of military characterization that you could probably get in
Halo.
Yeah,
she's a little salty, a little sarcastic. There's a bit of fight about her, yeah.
Like, when I think of, like, a woman Marine or something like that, like, she fits that build within the Halo perspective perfectly. It's like...
Yeah, if you've read the books, if you know enough about the ODSTs and especially the 105th Division, mm-hmm. and their reputation for being pretty brutal, she fits the bill for being a female ODST, no doubt about it.
Yeah, she is a really good character within the franchise. Yeah. She just got a bad introduction, unfortunately.
I think that's it. I mean, it's the same. It's the same with. So I did a video. It got a bit of a mixed opinions from the community. But I did a video about the Spartan 4's reputations and why people haven't received them very well. And really, in retrospect, yeah, it does boil down to the way in which they were introduced. I mean, the first Spartan 4's we ever saw were in campaign, and they were a small group of Spartan 4's that secured the area around Chief when Chief first met Lasky.
Right.
They were the consummate professionals. They were your typical Spartan-esque mentality. They were focused on the job. They didn't care that the Master Chief, the guy that saved the entire galaxy on more than one occasion, was literally inches from them. They just focused on their task. That is Spartans to a T. Unfortunately, when you jump into Spartan Ops, the first team that you come in contact with in that is Fireteam Majestic. And they have... Their writing, the way that they, their mannerisms, and it isn't in keeping with what you'd expect a Spartan to be like. So, yeah, in retrospect, I think the Spartan 4s were introduced and given somewhat of a bum hand in regards to the way that they were handled and the writing that surrounded them. But that doesn't detract from the fact that, yeah, there are some phenomenally good Spartan 4s out there.
There are. And Spartan Thorn was one of those that, I know the stories of Thorn was supposed to be in there in the place of Buck, and I thought Thorn had a really good story in there, and it just kind of sucks to see him sidelined.
Yeah, because again, Thorn, he has the potential to be a really interesting and engaging character. You know, we know a little bit about, you know, sort of where he came from, because he tells us in Spartan Ops, but
yep.
But just if you ever got the limited or legendary edition of Halo 4, and all the stuff that came in the box with that, which actually has like Thorn's, like stuff that was addressed to Thorn, so to speak, on Infinity when he arrived on Infinity. And there's like a little Spartan manual in there that has like almost notes written by Thorn inside of it,
yep,
to help out like you as a new recruit. You can tell he's an approachable character, but he's also a consummate professional, and he knows what's at stake. He's had loss in his life, and he wants to be a Spartan to protect people, to save people.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's such a shame that he's been somewhat sidetracked and other characters are being focused on, because he has potential.
Yeah, he really does. I'm hoping that we just finished reading through Smoke and Shadow and Renegades. Talking about
brilliant books.
Yeah. And how much those really intertwined all the different aspects of the Halo franchise and the universe together,
yeah,
was really cool to see. It's now one of my, it's up there as far as my favorite kind of Halo storylines, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to see just kind of some more of that get brought into the game a little bit. So, like, maybe have Thorne not necessarily be there, but, like, have some of these other little call-outs to other characters within the extended lore where, okay, to maybe just the average player, it's just a name out there, but to other people that are invested in the external fiction and the lore, it's like, oh, this is a cool little entryway into this, and I can learn some more about this person here, or something like that.
That's absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons that Halo, the Ghosts of Onyx is one of my favorite books, because it's got a little bit of everything. It's got, you know, and it folds into so many different stories going on in the universe at the time. Obviously, it happens around the same time that Halo CE, Halo 2, and Halo 3 happen. I mean, that those three games all happened within a couple of months of each other anyway. So, but the Ghosts of Onyx, you get a little taste of, like, of Spartanhood being a Spartan 2, and then you get a little taste of these new Spartan 3s and how different but how powerful they are as well, their new armor. You get a little taste of the Forerunners and some of their biggest and grandest structures. You get a little bit of mystery, a little bit of action, and it folds so many different stories together at the same time. It's great to have those little moments. I don't know if you guys have played the Fireteam Raven.
I have.
Arcade game, yeah. So just moving around the Autumn as an ODST is cool, but then having those little moments where Chief breezes in, does something epic, and then breezes out is like, yep. Oh, I was there. I did this. I remember this.
Yep. You see where it lines up.
Yeah.
That's one of the cool things about the book, The Flood, too.
Mm. Yeah, The Flood was, I get a lot of people say that they weren't as into it because they think it's just a retelling, you know, novelization of Halo C, but it's so much more than that. I mean, the one of the scenes that stands out the most to me is when Jenkins is infected by the Flood, but he's infected by, like, a weakened infection form. And it's the way it's described and the detail they go into to how the Flood do what they do, it's absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
And it adds so much more context to what was going on Halo at any given time. I mean, so much was happening in between the levels that you didn't get to see in the game, and it just brings so much more to light. It's really, yeah, I love it when stuff like that happens.
Yeah, it had another dimension to the story, which was, I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's why stuff like, I suppose, like Avengers Endgame, you know, it was so cool, and Avengers and Infinity War was so cool because it brings all these different stories together, and especially Endgame, because you actually go back through, you know, various movies that you've already seen, and these little moments in them that you didn't necessarily directly see but were there and they were happening, and it kind of, yeah, it's why stuff like that works. It's such a fan service, but it's so cool at the same time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Halo absolutely and utterly, yeah, thrives on little moments like that.
Yeah, that stuff really tickles my fancy, so I'm excited for the possibility of that in Infinite.
Yeah, especially with the use of that old Halo 3 fanfare, you know? The Believe fanfare. Doon, 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 doon. Love it.
Gosh, there's so much potential for a marketing strategy with Infinite.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm really hoping they've got, like, an augmented reality kind of viral marketing thing that they're going to do, because they did those with Halo 2 and Halo 3, but there's not been a whole lot since.
Yeah, and it's hard to do anything kind of like the in real life ARG type stuff now with whole COVID stuff, but maybe they'll be a little bit lax to where, okay, maybe there are some things that they can do for little pockets of community or I don't know. That's for them to figure out in this time.
Leave it to the marketing team.
Exactly. Someone asked, can you do a series on the UNSC Infinity about the different areas and decks of the ship? I think you've kind of touched on this, but I guess this is kind of more like a detailed walkthrough of, like, okay, you're kind of cutting away at the layers of Infinity.
Yeah, so my first big hit in video, the one that I did for Eckhart's Adder, was the most detailed breakdown of the Pillar of Autumn, where I dived into the Autumn to ridiculous levels of detail. I'm sure he was only expecting like an 8-minute video, but I gave him like a 38-minute video, and I was like, okay, there you go, have that. And I was fully expecting to be like, come on, man, I can't upload this. This is ridiculous. But he did, so it's all cool. But, yeah, and I'm actually writing at the moment the most detailed breakdown for the Spirit of Fire.
Oh.
And there is already the early beginnings of the script for the most detailed breakdown of Infinity. So yes, I can.
That's going to take probably a few months to do, right?
The Infinity should be my third. Yeah, probably my third biggest project. The second being Project John 117, because that in and of itself is, you know, it's an entire series. Each video averages about 10 to 15 minutes, and we're probably looking at about 70 to 80 videos.
Ooh.
So once you put all of those together, that's a really big project, and I will do a supercut on that eventually. But the biggest one, the single biggest script that I've got going at the moment, which is still, that's still tweaks I want to make to it because there's new information that I've come across, is the most detailed breakdown of an entire Halo ring.
I mean Halo Infinite might be something to wait for that.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm in the UK, means I couldn't get to Outpost Discovery, and I couldn't do the Halo experience, which is a shame. However, I have come across footage and some resources and some, you know, some talking to other people that have been to Outpost Discovery, and that information has gleaned some new insight into the workings, the inner workings of the Halo. So I've added that into the script. But in the same breath, like you rightly said, Halo Infinite is going to take place on Zeta Halo, and it looks like it's going to be almost entirely focused on Zeta Halo, and we're probably going to be exploring a Halo in a very in-depth manner, especially if it's an open world kind of way.
Definitely seems like
so.
It.
Yeah, so there is the temptation. I mean, the likelihood is at the moment, by the time I finish tweaking the script and start recording the early sections of it, Halo Infinite will probably have already launched.
You just put little tab markers of, okay, this might need to be updated when Infinite launches. This might need to
That's
be
it.
Updated.
That's it. So, but yeah, in answer to the question, yes, I absolutely can get around to a most detailed breakdown of the Infinity. And yeah, it is already on the way.
Cool. Very nice. There you go. Red Madness 01. Next one we have is, what is your theory on the lesser known aspects of the Sangheili culture? Like, what do they think of music, arts, agriculture, that kind of stuff?
See, that's not, at least to my mind, I mean, I don't always dive massively deep into the Covenant. That's why I'm really glad that people like Covey Cannon does, you know, gives a bit of a service to the Covenant and the Covenant species, because I certainly don't dive into them as much as I should. And they are a very interesting, a huge faction of Halo. So I probably should give them a bit more attention.
Sounds like you've got your hands full to begin with already.
Yeah, true. Yeah, but as far as Sangheili culture goes, I'm aware that obviously their history, much of their history, is being a very warrior-like race. But they've also got a lot of influences of what appear to be like samurai kind of influences in their culture, and very almost medieval keep kind of influences. So as far as their interest in like lesser known information like art and things like that, I think a lot of their art seems to be expressed in war. I mean, if you look at how ornate the Arbiter's armor is, and how decorative they make the armor, that suggests to me that they do have a very keen eye for artistic expression. And we just haven't seen a lot of it. Obviously, we've seen the huge statues on Sangheili in Halo 5, and a lot of their other sort of constructs and ancient kind of ruins and things like that look quite, sort of almost artistically inspired. I would love to know more about that, but yeah, as things stand, I don't know as much about the Covenant as I should. But I from what I've seen, I'm really into the art style, so to speak, or the artistic expression of the Sangheili. I'd love to know what their music's like, because the music really tells something about the culture that it comes from. That's why different music stuff. I mean, I've as cliche as it sounds, as from a music standpoint, I'm into everything. You know, I like heavy metal, I like rock, you know, there's some aspects of pop I quite like, but I also like world music. I'm quite into jazz, I'm quite into funk. So yeah, it's cliche as it sounds, I'm into practically everything. Even classical stuff, orchestral stuff and things like that.
Cool.
And so as a consequence of that, yeah, I can appreciate that the music is an expression of the culture who makes it. And I would absolutely and utterly love to know what the Sangheili music sounds like, because it would be probably a more purer way to express Sangheili culture than actually reading a book or literature or seeing a city or whatever. It would be a purer expression of who they are and what they value and what they care about.
I mean, I guess the closest thing we have to that might be Halo Legends.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, Halo Legends. Yeah, I'm guessing you're talking about the is it the duel
between
between the one of the last arbiters, so to speak, but the last normal arbiter before they were made heretics, so to speak.
And then the music what they play on when you're first on St. Helios, I'm guessing that is probably going to be influential a little bit.
Probably, yeah.
Of what it might be, or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be quite interesting to find out, yeah.
Bernard Oreski, on Twitter, he says, how much is the UNSC crippled without AI aid in the war against Cortana and her fellow AI? How do you think that will affect humanity and its colonies and allies?
So from a civilian standpoint, massively. A lot of the infrastructure, a lot of the colonies in general are run by artificial intelligence. I'm aware that obviously smart AIs are generally speaking the type of AI that are convinced by the created ethos and go over and support Cortana. I don't think the dumb AIs are susceptible to it. And thus the dumb AIs, they live for longer anyway, and they tend to administrate cities like the superintendent did in New Mombasa. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that the sudden absence or even the active almost interference of an aggressive smart AI on civilian population centers will be absolutely and utterly massive. Huge loss of life and living standards being basically apocalyptic, I would imagine. However, from a military standpoint, I would imagine, much like most navies that exist today, they will be trained in the more traditional aspects of naval practice. Even in the book, it would probably have been Halo the Flood. Captain Keyes demonstrated exceptionally good tactical calculations in regards to the ship, how he could physically land her. It's said that he landed the Pillar of Autumn, a 1.17 kilometer long ship, on a halo ring manually. He did that on his own,
yeah,
which is just ridiculous. So I would imagine most of the militaries are probably trained in the more traditional aspects, and although the AIs are very useful and they can do slip space calculations and they can sort of administrate a lot of the more remedial tasks, so to speak, of naval life, I don't think the militaries would have become hopelessly dependent upon them and would actually just kind of almost flip the switch from digital to analog and go, okay, guys, we're back to tradition here. Let's work this out manually. And again, they'd probably still have the dumb AIs as well to help them. I mean, dumb AI is such a misnomer term anyway. They're by no means dumb. They're fantastic. They're brilliant, but they're very narrow band. They're very focused on one particular aspect or one particular goal or
right.
tactic. So, yeah, I think the militaries would probably, although it would be a little bit of a handicap or it would take some getting used to, the militaries wouldn't necessarily be massively affected other than the fact that, you know, these AIs may, you know, seize the moment of opportunity and perhaps, I don't know, vent ships, you know, and perhaps kill large populations before people had a chance to react. But those who were able to react quick enough and be able to purge the AI or whatever, I think could just almost flick the switch and fend for themselves. But it's the loss of life from the civilian standpoint, which would be very interesting to see how that's panned out.
Yeah, for sure. All right. I got a couple of shotgun questions for you. That's all the questions that we got from the community. So thanks to everyone that wrote those in.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite Halo campaign?
That's putting me in Halo 2. Yeah, I'm going to say Halo 2 because it's one that I keep going back to. I keep going back to most of them, but Halo 2, like, there's something about Halo 2. There's something about being on Earth, something about suddenly appearing at Delta Halo, something about the Great Schism, about exploring the Covenant. There's something about Halo 2 that keeps me coming back, so I'm going to say Halo 2.
I'm right there with you on that one. Favorite Halo multiplayer?
Halo 3. That's probably where my best memories of playing Halo are. Just gaming with mates, either sort of from our own homes and meeting up online or through LAN Fest, literally lugging our 360s and TVs to each other's houses and networking them all together and all jumping online while drinking beer and eating junk food. That was literally just the best of times. So Halo 3 for the nostalgia, if nothing else.
Those were the days.
Indeed.
LAN parties. I remember them well. So good. So good. Favorite Halo character?
Oh, I know so many people would just say John, Master Chief, because he is the guy. And although he is the guy and I do love him and he's awesome, I have this thing with... this is going to sound weird now.
No wrong answer.
I have this thing with Halsey.
Do tell.
It's... Yes, we're romantically involved. No, we're not. There's something about her. There's something about her intellect. That's why I'm a little bit at odds with some of the newer books that have kind of painted Halsey to be the war criminal and really kind of thrown her under the bus. And as a general rule of thumb, the community seems to kind of somewhat resent her now, which is it's reasonable under the circumstances, I suppose. But Oni were as much to blame as Halsey was. I mean, Oni gave the go-ahead on most of the things that she did anyway. They funded it. They got her into the Office of Naval Intelligence in the first place. So,
yep.
You know, take that as you see fit. But there's something about her intellect. There's something about her character, how she expresses herself. The fact that it's painfully obvious, especially when you read through her journal, that when she talks about situations like having to kidnap children or augment children with augmentations that she knows are going to kill a large number of them, you can tell by the way her wording changes and her tone changes in her writing that she's almost switching off her emotion. She doesn't want to confront the reality of what's being done, of what she's having to do. And she's just dealing with cold, hard logic instead. So something about her expression of her humanity, the fact that even in some of the books, I think Ghosts of Onyx is probably the best example of it, she realizes actually, you know, weighing the lives of, you know, billions against the lives of the few children that had to die in the process was perhaps the wrong tact. And she does try to save as many of, quote unquote, her Spartans as she possibly could. And just her character development, her arc, her intelligence, her... Yeah, something about her is just, I find, really, really intriguing.
That makes sense. That doesn't surprise me at all, actually.
It's kind of logical when you consider, you know, my background.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking about. A favorite fictional universe outside of Halo?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good one.
I got some good questions.
Yeah. I've been really into Anthem recently. I know it's got a pretty bad rap with the community at large, but Anthem's quite good. But I think when I weigh it up, probably Mass Effect.
I love Mass Effect.
Yeah, probably Mass Effect, just because it's the way they worked. I mean, it's so deep. The amount of information you can go into, the amount of immersion you can go into is just absolutely ridiculous. But it's the way they worked the storyline. The one allowance, the one, you know, sort of exception, so to speak, is the existence of this element that when you give it a positive charge, it increases mass. You give it a negative charge, it decreases mass. The element zero, ESO, that, you give them that one little allowance and everything else in the entire universe factors into it. Everything works within that context then. And nothing has an exception. Nothing's just kind of, oh, it's this way just because this is fun. Everything worked in that context. And the level of Like there's so many levels of narrative. You can go deeper and deeper and deeper and still feel like you're nowhere near the bottom.
Yeah.
And I spent hours upon hours upon hours during my college and uni days playing that until the early hours of the morning, and then waking up like a zombie the next morning thinking, oh Christ, I got to go to uni. I got to do this, that, and the other. But also thinking like, yeah, but last night was awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those franchises where, like, I almost think in the, like, if you took a comparison of Mass Effect and Halo Combat Evolved, from just the lore perspective, I would almost say Mass Effect has a little bit more lore. And if you kind of match it up with Mass Effect 2, Halo 2, and Mass Effect 3, Halo 3.
Yeah.
Like, Mass Effect is probably, like, one of those that the lore there is actually deeper in just in that confines, but the fact that Halo's kept going is like, okay, now Halo definitely has kind of that lore thrown as far as video games go.
Yeah. Although, you know, don't speak too soon. As I recall, there's been some information dribbling out recently that perhaps Mass Effect may be due for a resurgence. So
really?
Yes.
I haven't played Andromeda. I've played through 3.
Yeah, I played 1 through 3. I've got Andromeda. I've been meaning to play it, but I just haven't gotten around to it. But yeah, I've heard little dribs and drabs of information that Mass Effect may be on the agenda. It's all but confirmed, as I recall at least, that there is now genuine work happening towards a new edition of Mass Effect, and not an extension of Andromeda, going back to Milky Way galaxy instead, and focusing on the Mass Effect that we left effectively at the end of Mass Effect 3. So,
quick tangent. Have you seen the fan film that basically combines the Halo universe, Mass Effect, Star Trek, and Star Wars?
I haven't, no.
I will send you a link on Discord.
Please do. I'd be very interested.
It's really cool. It's about 20 minutes long, and it's really good.
That's cool. I got to have a look at that. That'd be cool.
It's really good. Favorite movie or movie franchise?
Ooh, okay, obviously, you can probably already guess the Marvel movies are pretty awesome. You know, the fact that is now 15 years worth of movies that they've got now?
Yeah, oh, wow,
thereabouts,
really?
I think, was it 2007
or 8?
Yeah, something like
I guess,
that. That the first Iron Man movie came out. So obviously that's a... especially for someone who loves lore, loves diving into stuff and learning, you know, information and stuff like that. That's, and especially the technology. I mean, I guess you can probably surmise I'm, you know, Iron Man is my guy.
Yep.
But I suppose Iron Man is everyone's guy. Aside from the obvious, I do really like the Dark Knight series.
Oh.
Yeah, so Batman Begins, Dark Knight, and Dark Knight Rises. Because I don't know, it's still the superhero theme, but it's more gritty, it's more aggressive, it's more raw, it's darker in tone. Obviously, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is quite, quote-unquote, colourful, quite light, quite jokey. But the Dark Knight, even like Man of Steel, things like that, they were much more darker in tone. And I had such high hopes for, like, the Justice League, a decent stab at like the DC equivalent of what the Avengers has become. But unfortunately that wasn't to be. As far as a movie franchise, so to speak, there's something about The Dark Knight, I just keep going back to it, and every single time I watch it, it's like I'm watching it for the first time all over again.
Cool. I haven't seen those in a while.
It's just the Joker performance that Heath Ledger gives.
Oh, yeah, it's really good. Really good.
Yeah. I can even have a little bit of a kicker about how more and more gravelly Christian Bale's Batman voice got, you know?
Yep.
The first movie is like, I'm Batman. And then the next one, where were the other drugs going?
Exactly. You know? Exactly. It kind of gets just more and more extreme. Yeah, wow. Now you make me want to go watch those again. I haven't seen those in a long time.
The only thing that really sort of grips me now is the fact that they changed Bane's voice. You know, when the trailer first launched for The Dark Knight Rises, Bane's voice was menacing and aggressive.
Oh, you mean between the trailer and the movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it was menacing and aggressive. And I know that people say, oh, I can't understand what you're saying and stuff like this. Well, you're not listening hard enough. it was aggressive and menacing. And then, you know, they retooled it for the actual movie release. And we got, not as bad as yours, I fear. You know, it's like, oh, come on. That wasn't Bane.
Gotcha. Favorite music genre?
Favorite music genre.
I know you kind of touched on this already, but
yeah.
Is there one that kind of stands out or speaks to you more than the others?
Orchestral, like classical orchestral kind of stuff. Not. I'm not talking like Bach, Beethoven, stuff like that, but Hans Zimmer, for example.
Oh, yes. Hans is good.
So like movie scores, yep. Almost like that kind of level of orchestral theatrical music, because there's something about the power and the emotion that can be portrayed in music. I mean, I've, as sad as it seems, I do have swathes of movie scores saved and downloaded, and I listen to regularly, including the Dark Knight soundtrack.
Yep.
but it's just that's probably the stuff that inspires me the most. I would say that, and then really draws, almost emotion to the surface. That's my favorite kind of genre.
That's my think music, actually.
Yeah,
is those sound like movie soundtracks and video game soundtracks. Whenever I need to zone in, like when I was studying in college, or even when like doing stuff for work, if I need to zone in on something, that's the kind of music I put on.
Mm. There's I can't remember who it was by, but there's a remix of Mozart's Moonlit Sonata on, I'll have to send you the link on YouTube, and it is so like ethereal, and although it's familiar, it's Moonlit Sonata, Moonlit Sonata, but it sounds like it could be the theme to a zombie apocalypse movie or something like that, and I'm absolutely stunned it hasn't been used in that context yet. Because it just invokes this kind of post-apocalyptic, lonely, quiet world and a sole survivor against hordes. It's just... it's gripping.
Nice. Favorite pastime?
Favorite pastime? I've got... I said at the start of the interview, I've got a family. I've got two young kids. And yeah, my favorite pastime is spending time with them. And doing family days out. Obviously, that's not happening very much at the moment with everything going on with the coronavirus.
Right.
But just being able to go somewhere and just spend a day as a family, just have a pure moment, just be with them, be in the moment, enjoy each other's company, whether it's going to a theme park somewhere, or just going for a walk, or going to a zoo, or it doesn't matter. As long as it's a family day. And it's a pure moment. That's probably my favorite pastime.
That's really cool. That's really sweet. I'm sure you just spoke to a lot of families out there.
Yeah.
and then the last quick fire one I have is a place or city or landmark, etc., that you would want to visit that you haven't visited before.
I'd want to visit, but I haven't visited.
Like if there's anywhere in the world that you could go and visit that you haven't been to yet, where would you go?
Mombasa.
Fair answer.
See, it seems like relatively obvious for somebody who loves Halo. Okay, so it's not just for the fact that it's Halo. I should probably validate this and say it's not Mombasa exclusively that I'd want to go to, but Kenya in general, East Africa in general. The foot of Kilimanjaro, the African savannah. It's basically considered to be the cradle of humanity. It's where mankind came down from the trees and took our first steps. And, although I'd love to walk around Mombasa and be like, oh, this is where we could do that. That's where this happens, blah, 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 in the Halo games. And I can go out into the sticks a little bit and go to Voi and go, one day this is going to be a big city and, the chief is going to save us, just go off on a bit of a daydream. It's knowing that humanity originated there. Our entire species came from this small patch of Earth. There's very few places I've been that give me the same kind of feeling, but I've been to a few places that have this weird kind of sense of coming home. I feel like I've come home, even though I've never been there before. That happened with Edinburgh. I went to Edinburgh with my father quite a few years ago now. And the first time I arrived at Edinburgh, it was really quite bizarre. It felt like I'd been there before. It felt like I'd come home. And I'd like to think that Kenya, that the East Africa, the cradle of life, so to speak, would be a similar kind of feeling. And there are other places, but that's probably the one that sticks out the most.
Very cool. Hey, that works.
Lovely. That works.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking time to be on the podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your evening to spend some time with us. Even though I know we went over a little bit. Sorry about that.
That's all good.
Give the people the lowdown on where they can find you outside of, well, I guess for people that may have never heard you before, your YouTube as well. I was going to say outside of YouTube, but
yeah.
Just tell the people where they can find you.
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on YouTube. You can search me directly by just going to www.youtube.com/installation00. You'll find me there. And I'm pretty much on every major social media platform that you can find. So I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. You again just search installation00 and you will inevitably find me. And all of my social links are also at the bottom of all of my videos. So obviously if you feel inclined, you can also find me in my Discord server as well. I'm always lurking there and talking to the folk that call my Discord server their home, or at least home away from home.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Very nice. Well, thanks again for being on. It's been a pleasure and an honor getting to learn a little bit more about you.
It's been a pleasure on my end as well, absolutely.
We look forward to maybe having you on again in the future, maybe when Infinite gets closer and there's some more exciting stuff to talk about, maybe a roundtable or two.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good to me. Just give me a shout. You know where to find me, and I'll be happy to jump aboard.
Sounds good. Well, thanks everybody for listening to this interview. And make sure you check out Installation00. He does a lot of great stuff in the community. He's very active and involved with the lore side of stuff, and his YouTube videos, if you have the time to kill, they're very detailed and some of them are very long, and they're worth the watch. I try to make it a point to watch as many as I can.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us.